Why is Netflix continuing to work with Harry and Meghan? It's a good question. Welcome to Constable Confidential. I'm Simon Constable, and joining us today is Lee Cohen. He's a contributor to Fox News, The Daily Telegraph, and The Spectator in the UK, as well as other distinguished publications. He joins us now. He is an expert on the royal family, and he's going to explain what's going on there. Welcome to your debut on Constable Confidential, Lee.
Delighted to be with you, sir.
So you have followed what Harry and Meghan have been doing for the last few years, and we know that they haven't really had a major success in their broadcasting efforts, including Spotify and Netflix, and yet Netflix is continuing to work with them. What is going on there?
So what I suspect it is, and I imagine you're talking about the remarks last week of the CEO of Netflix saying that they were going to forge ahead with the Sussexes. And what I believe it is, Simon, is that love them or hate them, people tune in to the Sussexes. And while many are saying in Britain, why do we have yet another story on them? In the United States, anyway, and I suspect in Britain too, they do drive viewership and readership, and they elicit extreme responses. And what that means is lots of clicks. So whilst you or I might not love their behavior or what they have to say or the damage that they've inflicted, people are interested in them.
Well, I've spent some time in the broadcast world, and I know one thing about putting on a show is that the importance is in making the guests and other things not about the hosts, right? That's what makes it really interesting. If Harry was interviewing some people who had been maimed in war, who had lost limbs, and he asked them their stories, that would be very interesting. Make it about the soldiers he served with who may have, you know, lost an arm or a leg or eyesight or whatever. That would be very interesting. I saw none of that in what I've seen. Now, I may have missed something, and if I have, then I'm obviously, you know, behind the eight ball a little bit, but I really have no evidence of seeing that at all. I've also heard that one of the hosts was not actually doing the interviews, but rather just having them pasted in afterwards, just basically reading from a cue card. Now, that doesn't seem very good either, because you can't get the connection with your guest either. And I've done a lot of interviewing, as you know, and getting a connection with the guest is very important. The guest has to trust you. And if it's just spliced in, it's difficult to know what's going on. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's so much to react to what you've said. And I think you put your finger on it. You're an outstanding... I've seen you in action, actually live in studio with some very esteemed guests. And the success that you have is forming a relationship, a trusted relationship, and asking questions that stimulate and motivate the response. And I know what you're referring to is that Meghan Markle is reported to have done exactly what you just said, to not have done the interviews live, but to have had them spliced in. Now what, Simon, does this make you think of? To me, this immediately makes me think of the furore with the Princess of Wales now, where a picture was manipulated. That's the same kind of manipulation, although I think manipulating a picture is something we all do. But manipulating an interview like that is something that only someone who's not skilled at all in the craft of interviewing. So one wonders why is this person engaging at it at all? And we know the answer because of her name and her fame. But that's not good enough. You have to have qualifications. You have to have substantive issues. You can't just simply be given questions by a producer. You have to inject yourself in order to be as successful as you have in your interviewing career.
You also have to follow the conversation, which is very, very important. Otherwise, it looks stilted and sounds stilted. So they're continuing to do that and obviously continue to cause a bit of trouble with the remainder of the royal family. Now, you've written a piece, an interesting piece, about Prince Edward. Now, not a lot of people in America are going to know who Prince Edward is, but he's the youngest son of Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, both sadly passed away. Now, he's not really been in too much of a scandal. He did join the Royal Marines in the 80s, didn't last long, left it, wasn't really for him. And, you know, as what we know about him, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the Royal Marines isn't for everybody. It's a savage unit, and that's what protects part of Britain, which is very good. What were you writing about him? I've read it, but I want you to explain.
So you're right. And that was certainly sort of early in his adult career as a member of the royal family in the spotlight. But since then, the point is that Prince Edward, as you say, the youngest child of the late Queen and the late Duke of Edinburgh, the youngest sibling of the current king. And Prince Edward was last year, almost a year ago to this day, named to the title of his late father, the former Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip. So he has been rewarded, if you will, with a very important title because
it's a high honor, and it's hard to explain to folks in anywhere but the UK, that being called the Duke of Edinburgh is a big deal. That's like 27 thumbs up all in one go and a big pat on the back from his brother.
Indeed, and particularly because this is not a title that passes hereditarily. It has to be appointed. So his brother, the king, actually chose him for this title, and his father, Prince Philip, who held the title before him, was considered to be a national treasure. So as you say, that's why the gift of this title holds quite a lot of respect because of who held it before. At a time, Simon, when there are deep concerns that the royal family, the bench of the working royals, is very slim because of health issues with the Princess of Wales, health issues with the king, with Prince Andrew, who's been taken out of service because of some scandals, and with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, whose appalling behavior has removed them, and of course the fact that they wished to step away from royal life. So this leaves very few people that can carry out the shared responsibilities of the royal family. And Prince Edward he's risen to the occasion and done extremely well. He's represented the family and the institution of monarchy extremely well. He's got a lot of his father's charm, as I said in the piece that I believe you're referencing.
Yes,
and he does what the royal family is supposed to do. He casts a light not on himself but on others. He casts a light on the country and reminds people of their history. And he creates goodwill. And he's married a wonderful person in
Sophie of Wessex is his wife, and there have been since he's been married, which is quite a long time now, there have been no scandals or anything even approaching that bit between them in the newspapers. And the newspapers in Britain can be savage if you step out of line, you're royal. It can be savage. It's the truth.
With respect, early on in their marriage, there were a few scandals, actually, in that
I missed them.
Well, yes, because they're not only are they long ago, but they're not anything rising to the occasion of what the Sussexes dish up. The scandals, if you will, and they weren't really scandals, but they were things that the press really liked to needle in on, were that at the beginning, Prince Edward, after he left military service, he engaged in a career as a film producer. And Sophie, the former Sophie Rees-Jones, was a public relations professional. And so at the beginning, there was some tension. Would they continue in those roles? And in fact, they gave up any kind of non-royal professional service. And so it really isn't an issue. And not only did they give it up, but both Sophie and Prince Edward have stepped into the shoes of working royals in the most marvelous way. Sophie was, of course, a daughter-in-law to the Queen, but her conduct and her ability to embrace the role of a royal was so admirable that the Queen looked at her almost as another daughter.
And that just shows you how welcoming the royal family can be. Now, a few years ago, a colleague of mine asked me who was the head of state of the UK. And at the time, it was the Queen. So I said, the Queen. And I was told, that can't be right. Who's the real head of state? And I said, no, it's the Queen. She's head of the church. She's head of the army. She is the head of state. And I couldn't get beyond that. How do you explain the royals to your friends in America when talking about them? Because it can be quite confusing, because Britain isn't a republic. I'm a subject of the Queen. It's very hard to give up your passport unless you do something absolutely heinous. You basically, you're a subject of the monarchy. So now King Charles, I keep calling him Prince Charles because it was most of my life. He's the head of state and will remain that way probably until he dies.
Well, right. And what many Americans don't understand is that while we have separation of powers in that, while we don't have the separation of head of state and head of government, our president, the chief executive, is both head of state and head of government. And in the United Kingdom, of course, it's not that way. The prime minister is the head of government, and the sovereign, be it a king or queen, is, of course, the head of state. And I argue that, while in 1776 we did what was right for our country, that in a way, Simon, we gave up the baby with the bathwater, because we gave away some very important things. Now, with a political head of government who's also a head of state, there's no one to rise above politics. There's no one who doesn't have his hand in the till. There's no one in America in government that doesn't have to do fundraising. There's no one that can look with a completely sort of benign and long-term view as a sovereign can. Now, in the best hands, a good king or queen is a magnificent asset for a country, as was Queen Elizabeth. And I believe that King Charles, to his credit, in his first year, before he was suffering any health challenges, he really rose to the occasion marvelously and steadied the ship at a time when many were concerned for the future of the monarchy, with the queen that for most people was the sovereign and the monarch as long for their whole lifetime.
Absolutely. And her father, King George was also well revered as well. So we've had the successive people, and we wish, of course, King Charles gets better as fast as he possibly can. It'd be nice to be able to see him out on Horse Guards Parade, perhaps on on top of a horse for the tripping of the color. Let's move on to some other things that you follow. One of the things that I was really distressed at during the Brexit election, the referendum, whatever you want to call it, President Obama said that if the Brits chose to leave the European Union, they would be, and that includes me, of course, will be back of the queue for a trade deal. Now, I think that really comes up to interfering with a foreign election. But that aside, it seems that President Biden has continued that policy of keeping Britain at the back of the queue, even though it is a very large economy. It is larger than California's economy, and people forget that, and people wouldn't ever think of putting California last. They probably want to put it first. Anyway, what's your thought?
Well, my goodness, Biden and his boss before him were among the most anti-British presidents in the history of our country, or in at least in recent history.
Not including George Washington, shall we
right.
say.
shall we say the most anti-British modern presidents.
Okay.
With Biden, it's just been a catastrophe. The toll that his presidency has taken on the special relationship. It began just as Obama's did, symbolically, with the removal of President Trump had put a bust of Churchill in the Oval Office, and that had been there before Obama got there. Obama removed it, and then Trump put it back. And then Biden removed it yet once again, perhaps setting a tone for the anti-British nature of his presidency. But then moving to substance on so many levels, Simon, Biden has been catastrophic for the special relationship and anti-British. Firstly, in his neglect of our most important fighting partner, the United Kingdom, during the chaotic and deadly withdrawal that Biden brought about during the Afghanistan situation.
In fact, understanding is that the British troops weren't really informed that this was going to happen and when they were out there, which seems to be really quite shameful. If you're working with an ally and you're retreating, whatever you want to call it, giving up, surrendering, then you ought to tell your allies that that's what you're doing.
But Simon, this isn't just any ally. This is our most trusted fighting partner, who have fought side by side with us in almost every war of the last century, and our most important intelligence partner, with whom we share very classified and strategic information. And to treat the United Kingdom like that is absolutely disgraceful. I read that post this Afghanistan withdrawal, that Biden was denounced in Parliament like no U.S. president has ever been denounced. I heard also that he didn't even return Boris Johnson's calls. There was a great delay after the withdrawal where he didn't even return the government head of our most trusted and staunchest military fighting partner. Now, that is just, it beggars belief.
Thank you very much. Lee Cohen, who's a contributor to Fox News, the Daily Telegraph in the UK, and The Spectator, the UK edition of that fantastic magazine, and also a contributor to GB News in the UK and other distinguished publications and broadcasts. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Lee Cohen, for your debut on Constable Confidential. I'm Simon Constable, and that's it.